AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. The Northeast is digging out from a storm, and that overgrown Punxsutawney rat saw his shadow, so now we've got another 6 weeks of winter coming our way. And it looks like Mother Nature is going to try to pack 2 or 3 weeks of winter into just a few days this weekend. Bitter temps are coming our way.
Live from Groundhog Day 2021 via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with Dr. Frank Mitlerner, UC Davis professor and air quality specialist. Then it's on to Steve Cubbage, VP of Data Services at Farm Mobile. And in the final segment, Sarah Schaefer, editor of Top Producer. And right after the news, I'll just keep on talking. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
Thank you so much, Davis. Yes, you're going to just you're going to keep talking, but we've got an important update coming. You've got another issue or edition of Landowner Newsletter out there. We need to find out what you've been focused on.
There's a little something in there that I think you might find interesting, given guess what? The Biden administration plays a role in what I'm about to say.
Is that right?
If you can believe such a thing. Yes.
I can. Yes. I can believe it. I can believe it. Hey, get this. GameStop is down to $100.
Oh, well, there you go. You see?
It's $124 lower. And it's at $100.
I've said it 100 times. You got to know when to fold them. You know?
Well, know when to Portnoy folded them and put a tweet out that he lost $700,000 on GameStop.
Oh.
How?
Oof.
How does that happen? I guess it's go big or go home. And in this case, he went big and is going home.
It's
just absolutely crazy what's happening. And we've got, as I mentioned, it is Groundhog Day, and we do have Secretary Vilsack testifying and in his nomination hearing for USDA Secretary. I'm sure you've got some news on that, buddy. Why don't we go ahead and get to it?
Sure. Well, the big jump in silver futures to open the week has caught the attention of the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, that's the CFTC, with Acting Chairman Rostin Beeman saying, quote, "The commission is communicating with fellow regulators, the exchanges, and stakeholders to address any potential threats to the integrity of the derivatives markets for silver and remains vigilant in surveilling these markets for fraud and manipulation." I wonder, Chip, go. Yeah.
There are trading rules, and without those rules, then you start to run the risk of manipulation. So and that can't happen. You can't, cornering a market is illegal. And coordinating to drive the price of a commodity or a stock in one direction or the other, coordinating, colluding, is not legal. We can't forget this, that there are rules in trading.
Well, eligible farmers continue to report they either have just received or received in late December their first 50% payout for 2019 WIP Plus. Most have received their entire 2018 WIP Plus payment. That's most. USDA's Farm Service Agency says it put taking WIP applications on the back burner in lieu of the ongoing CFAP review. And I don't know how big a deal this is, but if you haven't received your expected WIP Plus payments, I imagine it's a pretty big deal.
Well, yeah, I think it probably is. And part of the holdup on the 2019 WIP Plus is the plus part. It's the quality losses that they're trying to really zero in on and try to figure out how that's going to be handled.
President Joe Biden late Monday spent 2 hours with 10 moderate Republicans discussing different aid proposals, with the Democrats pushing a $1.9 trillion package while the moderate Republicans released a $618 billion plan. Now, after the discussions, Senator Susan Collins said she and her colleagues had held, quote, a very productive, cordial 2-hour meeting with the president, and that they were, quote, very appreciative that Biden had spent so much time with them. Now, Biden would need at least 10 Republican lawmakers to back his plan to garner the supermajority necessary to advance it to a final vote. The story that just won't quit giving. Jim.
Yeah, that's right. It's going to go to budget reconciliation route. I don't think there's any question about it. The Democrats will get their bill, and it's going to go through a different route than what the Senate Republicans anticipate right now.
China's top diplomat warned the U.S. not to cross a, quote, red line in an attempt to steer a bilateral relationship toward areas of cooperation as President Biden signals continuity with the previous administration on sensitive issues, including Hong Kong and Xinjiang. Yang Jiechi, today, Beijing time, emphasized the potential for a healthy U.S.-China relationship on public health, trade, and climate, echoing recent language from leader Xi Jinping, but he left room for negotiation and limited room, in fact, on negotiation for issues such as human rights. So, sure, we can work together on public health and climate and stuff like that. Human rights, stay away.
Yeah, that sounds like the Chinese way. More tests, more warnings, more mind your own business. Biden administration messages are coming out of Beijing.
Mm-hmm. Well, President Biden warned the U.S. may reinstate sanctions on Myanmar following a military coup in that Southeast Asian nation. The seizure of powers provides an early test of Biden's efforts to counter the appeal of China's authoritarian governing model in the region. And finally, the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee will hold a business meeting February 3rd, that's tomorrow, to vote on the nomination of former Michigan Governor Jennifer Granholm to serve as the next energy secretary. Granholm faced another rather intense questioning about energy and climate during her confirmation hearing before the panel last week. Several lawmakers pressed Granholm on the impact that the suspension of new oil and gas leases on federal lands could have on the economies of several states where those are most prevalent. Granholm sought to assure lawmakers that the expectation is that while there could be some job losses, the new jobs created by efforts to address climate change will more than offset any job losses. Chip, you mentioned the January landowner issue. In that, I focused on some research out of the Kansas City Fed. Economist and Vice President Chad Wilkerson was reporting on a study done in the 10th Federal District, so that's the Kansas City Fed, on energy and energy production. He found that 45% of firms there indicated they plan to reduce CO2 or ethane emissions. 42% of firms plan to recycle or reuse water. And reduce, at least a third of them plan on reducing excess flaring. So those firms, now this was taken in mid-December. So at that time, those firms were like, well, hey, we're doing stuff to try and control emissions, to try and reduce CO2. We're already doing some things to try and help out. Now add to that, in that same survey, expectation indices increased. Jumping back to positive for the first time since the first quarter of 2019, at a reading of 26, that was up from zero in Q2 and Q3 of 2020. That indicates more firms expected energy activity to expand. Future of total revenues, total profits indices rose substantially. Expectations for capital expenditures, wages, benefits, and access to credit also expanded in that survey. Now, this is interesting because in that 10th district where they're so heavily reliant on energy production, new climate policy, and especially from a new energy secretary, could really impact what goes on there. That's all in landowner in January.
Excellent. Excellent. Good stuff, Davis. Thank you so much. Okay. We are going to be talking about dietary recommendations from the World Economic Forum. Really? Again? We're having to deal with this? We got Dr. Frank coming up next here on AgriTalk. Hey, everybody. Chip Flory here. I've got a great deal for you to tap into all the information at the 2021 Top Producer Summit. You don't have to travel. It's all online, and I'll pick up half the tab. That's right, because you listen to AgriTalk, Top Producer is working with us to take your fee from $150 down to $75. Use promo code AgriTalk when you register at tpsummit.com. It's a half-price deal only for AgriTalk listeners. Use promo code AgriTalk at tpsummit.com.
Then put your little hand in mine. There ain't no hill or mountain we can't climb.
AgriTalk is brought to you by TechMix. Cattlemen, are you tired of losing newborn calves? Calf Perk is an energy boost that gets weak calves standing and nursing. Get Calf Perk from TechMix at calfperk.com.
Chip, yes, it's going to be cold. It's going to be dark.
Yep.
And it's going to last the rest of your life.
I feel like it's just beginning.
Uh-huh. It may be.
We may get to know that pretty well by the time everything is said and done. Love it. Happy Groundhog's Day, everybody. As we said, Secretary Vilsack is testifying right now at the Senate committee. One interesting piece of information there. Stabenow and Boozman are sharing the gavel on this one because the Senate still hasn't approved their organizational rules. So even though, you know, we're assuming that Debbie Stabenow is going to be the chairman of the Senate Ag Committee, that still hasn't been officially appointed. Okay. Let's bring him in. Dr. Frank Mitlerner. Dr. Frank is a UC professor, a University of California Davis professor and air quality specialist. He's in the Department of Animal Science, and he's the director of the CLEAR Center, and he joins us again right now. Dr. Frank, welcome back to AgriTalk.
Good morning, Flory.
Yes, good to talk with you again, sir. You know, one thing that I've never asked you to do on the show, Dr. Frank, is tell us about CLEAR. What exactly is it?
Well, the CLEAR Center is a center that I started a year ago out of the necessity that I feel that agriculture is not very good at talking about its sustainability efforts. And so half of the center is research. The other half is communications, and communications is so important, as you well know, Chip.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. And anything that we can do to get the message out from CLEAR, you know, we're going to be there to do it. You're going to be presenting at the Virtual Top Producer Summit in the Trust in Food Tract at TPS. But before we get to that, the dietary recommendations that came out of the World Economic Forum, what we would normally just refer to as Davos, they're telling us how we should eat again, Dr. Frank. And some of the recommendations are misguided, aren't they?
Well, in my opinion, they are misguided. First of all, if I need dietary recommendations, I wouldn't go to a bunch of economists, that's for sure. Right. I would go to people who are actually well-versed in this field. But secondly, they pretty much just adopted the so-called Eat Lancet committee recommendation that came out in 2019, a very heavy vegan, vegetarian biased set of guidelines that I have a real beef with.
Right. And it's vegan, vegetarian guidelines, but they do include just enough meat in there so that they can say, but look, hey, you can still eat meat.
Yeah, I mean, it's up to you. If one burger a week is the meat that you can live on, and or one and a half eggs per week, then it's true. There's still some animal source food in there. But it's certainly not very much. Some people eat that much for breakfast, one breakfast.
exactly. So the problem with what came out of the World Economic Forum is, once again, it got attention around the world. And it felt like there was a little bit of momentum building a week ago right now coming out of that. The momentum subsided much more quickly this time than what I anticipated it would, Dr. Frank. Is the message starting to wear thin with consumers around the world?
Yes. I mean, what we hear and what we hear loudly is the sentiments of a small group of activists, and they are in different groups. These can be food activists. These can be plant-based alternative companies and so on. Politicians, there's journalists, there are all different kinds of people. But their campaign has not really caught on. For example, those plant-based alternatives to meat now make up 0.6% of all protein sales. So 99.4% are the original. And this after years of intense indoctrination from that sector.
Right. It is amazing. When we see these kinds of recommendations come out, you know that they are consistently missing something, and they're consistently missing what you're studying, and that's the connection between animal agriculture and the ability to still battle greenhouse gas emissions and climate change, right?
Yeah. Let me tell you something really quickly to give you some nuance to the discussion. So the World Economic Forum uses the so-called Eat Lancet guidelines. I critiqued them last year because I didn't agree with their recommendations, particularly on the environmental side. I didn't see any indication in their report that their diet, this EAT diet, would do anything for the environment. And so I wrote to the authors, and I wrote to the science director of Eat Lancet, and he wrote back to me. And he said, and I quote, the meat EAT limits proposed by the commissions were not set due to environmental considerations, but solely in light of health recommendations. The dietary guidelines only refer to healthy eating. Thus, it's not the diet to reduce climate change, but the diet to reduce the risk of premature mortality. They themselves said their diet does not affect climate change. Now the right. Now the World Economic Forum takes that and says it does, even though the authors say it doesn't.
Right. So how do we... Well, obviously, we continue to talk about it and point out that they are... That they are spinning. It's a spin story, right? That's created by the anti-animal ag groups out there.
It started that way because they didn't get enough traction with the animal rights and animal welfare movement. They then later moved into the pink slime discussion, and that didn't really stick, so to say, no pun intended. And then they went into the climate change discussion. But it started with them. Now there's money to be made, and there are policies to be made. And if we don't watch it, then the people who are the loudest will get their ways. So it's time for us to really speak up, and I'm glad you're doing that.
Excellent. Okay. On February 23rd, you are going to be making a presentation with Dr. Temple Grandin. She's from Colorado State University, and it's a part of the TP Summit. The title of your presentation, The Livestock Industry and Sustainability. Don't give away the ending, but give us a preview of what you're going to be presenting with Dr. Grandin on February 23.
Well, what's extremely important is that the entire narrative around livestock and climate is about to change, because what we have been learning about methane really changes the entire carbon footprint discussion of our foods, because methane, which is the key greenhouse gas, has a very short lifespan of only 10 years. It's both produced and destroyed at equal rates. Yeah. And that means one part of this, namely the destruction, is always being left out. And people only talk about how this gas is produced. And that changes the narrative profoundly. And I think that's something to look forward to.
Okay. So this obviously methane is a greenhouse gas. But if it's destroyed as quickly as it is produced, can we already say that cattle are kind of net neutral on this?
Okay, so you can say that a constant herd, that's the important part, herd of cattle does not add additional carbon to the atmosphere, because the amount of methane produced and the amount of methane destroyed are in balance. It's called a flow gas for that reason.
Yep.
But if we increase herd size, then we put additional carbon into the atmosphere. We don't want that. And it's happening in part of the developing world as we speak. But last not least, if we manage to decrease methane, then we are pulling carbon out of the atmosphere, and that leads to a net cooling effect. Now think about how cool that is.
Yeah.
We can reduce global warming by reducing methane. And we are doing research, for example, here at UC Davis to get that done through, for example, feed additives, through manure treatments, and so on.
Yeah.
In California, we have already achieved a 25% reduction of methane. 25% reduction of methane. Every year, we are reducing 2 million metric tons of methane, and the state has now certified that and further encourages it. And
Most
importantly, our farmers are making money that way.
Yeah. Very cool. Is the methane story and getting the facts out, is that your number one priority for 21?
Yes. If you want to watch a short video, it's called Rethinking Methane. Rethinking Methane, it's on YouTube. It's freely available. It's 5 minutes. And I think it's really important for everybody to watch that. We need more voices, and we need them from everyone.
And it's excellent. It's an excellent video. No question about that. Dr. Frank, thank you so much for coming back. We got to keep telling the story about how some of these guidelines, recommendations have been misguided, and that we need to come back to logic. To logic. All right. Dr. Frank, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Jed. Bye-bye.
You bet. That is Dr. Frank Mittlerner from University of California, Davis. We'll be back with more. Hey, everybody. Chip Flora here. I've got a great deal for you to tap into all the information at the 2021 Top Producer Summit. You don't have to travel. It's all online, and I'll pick up half the tab. That's right, because you listen to AgriTalk, Top Producer is working with us to take your fee from $150 down to $75. Use promo code AgriTalk when you register at tpsummit.com. It's a half-price deal only for AgriTalk listeners. Use promo code AgriTalk at tpsummit.com.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Pro Farmer's senior market analyst Jeff Wilson joins us right now. Jeff, some pressure in corn, soybeans, and wheat again today.
All coming back from their session lows that we hit right after the reopening of the markets this morning. We're still down 10 to 12 in the beans, 4 to 5 in the corn. The wheat has made a bigger, recovery off the lows, simply because Egypt was confirmed buying 480,000 tons of wheat, and that included 120 of Russian wheat, which was a little bit of a surprise. I think that it sure looks like there's plenty of wheat around, so don't expect the wheat to be a leader. It's all about corn and beans as we move into the soybean harvest in Brazil and whatever happens with the Chinese demand for U.S. corn and beans.
Right. There was more demand announced for corn this morning, right? Mexico in here?
Yes. They bought 115,000 tons of old crop corn.
Okay.
But for the second day in a row, no new Chinese corn sales announcements, despite talk that they may have bought another 1.5 to 2 million metric tons last week when they were busy buying 5.85 million tons.
Yeah, they were very busy buying, no question. Okay, let's go over to the livestock trade. Got some positive changes there.
Yeah, I think they're acting pretty good, all things considered. We didn't close very well yesterday. We didn't get a full meat report yesterday on beef or pork. USDA had some technical problems. But it sure sounds like the cash markets are firming up this week, and that's the key to getting these futures that are at a premium to the cash market to continue to rally.
Right. Yeah, and if we can make that happen, then we've really pulled something off in here. All right, Jeff, thank you so much, buddy. I appreciate it. That is Pro Farmer Senior Market Analyst Jeff Wilson on Markets Now.
Then put your little hand in mine. There ain't no yellow mountain we can't climb.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
Nice going, Joe. You're playing last segment's tape.
I'm starting to detect a pattern. Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. That's Davis. Big Apple Joe's playing a big part in the show today. No question about that. All right. Mm-hmm. Let's continue the conversation. And we're going back down the carbon path. We've got Steve Cubbage with us. He's with Record Harvest. Joins us right now. Steve, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing just fine. Just fine. Steve's going to be presenting at Top Producer Summit as well. Before we get into what you're going to be doing there, Steve, let's talk about Record Harvest. What it is, what your goals are, who it's for, and what you're doing.
Well, Record Harvest is an independent precision agriculture firm based out of Nevada, Missouri. So we've been basically boots on the ground helping farmers with the precision equation for here now 22 years. So
yeah,
just just trying to understand and help growers sort through this technology and utilize the data that comes out of it.
Steve, you're one of the first into this precision ag and tracking things as aggressively as the industry does now. What tipped you off so early?
Well, I think, you know, just I was living it, actually, coming back to the farm myself in the mid-90s and, you know, just coincided with kind of that technological boom that started precision ag there in the 90s and got caught up in it and started a business around it.
Yeah. It just, you know, if nothing else, a willingness not to ignore it and the potential of precision ag, I think, played a big role in getting Record Harvest up and running. That's really cool, man. The presentation at TP Summit, Carbon Markets, Promises, Pitfalls, and Preparation. I'm going to reverse that on you. Okay? It's a great title, but I'm going to reverse it on you. And what have you already done to prepare for a viable carbon market?
Well, I think a lot of it revolves around data and a collection of data because, you know, obviously there's dollar signs in front of us, but to be paid here in this carbon market, you're going to have to be able to prove what you did on the fields, and you're going to have some history there that because these people aren't going to write checks for something that they can't prove, and I think that's probably number one is that. You've got to basically start having not only a record, but, you know, I think a digital record of the actions, you know, the practices of what you're doing out in your fields.
Okay. Do you expect to be compensated for what you've already done to this point?
You know, that's going to be a good question. I think that the debate's out there. I think there is going to be some goodwill and for those that have done, what I would say even sustainability practices up till now. But there's still a lot of ripe ground out there far as implementing practices that on ground that, you know, may need a cover crop, may need, you know, reverting to no-till. Those are going to be probably where the bigger dollars are.
Yeah, and Steve, I'm telling you, it's one of the things that concerns me as this carbon market is developing, the people that have laid the groundwork, that have done the research, that have done the experiments to figure out the best ways to sequester carbon, they may be in line for less of a payoff in this than the producer that's been dragging their feet and doing things wrong, but all of a sudden they make a big change and they get a big payoff. It doesn't feel right to me.
Yeah, it doesn't, you know, and I think, you know, there needs to be a strong voice from those that have led the path and kind of blazed and plowed the road, so to speak. And I think there's going to be an opportunity, but that's certainly a concern. And that's certainly a concern that comes up in many of these discussions with these carbon markets and facilitators.
Yeah. Yeah. Does that fit your middle item there, the pitfalls, is ignoring the groundwork that's already been laid one of the potential pitfalls here?
I think ignoring that, I think the other thing that's really a pitfall is that, you know, there's, you know, understanding what you're going to have to do in order to qualify for, you know, some of these carbon markets, because, you know, just for example, this is not a one and done, just sign up for a year and next year I can do something different. You're literally signing up a track of land in many cases for a carbon market for a decade or more. And, you know, it's kind of the equivalent of signing away your mineral rights on your ground. And so I think certainly, you know, read the fine print, understand that. Certainly there's going to be some issues that if you don't own that land or you're renting that land from a landlord, you know, if you're going to have to make a 10-year commitment, a 3-year landlord lease doesn't kind of match up with some of these issues or with that market. So certainly there's some pitfalls there. There's some research to do. Understand, you know, what that commitment is in detail. So you've got some homework to do.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, when this, as I started, and I'm talking about, not just months ago, years ago, started getting interested in the carbon market and the potential for it and trying to build my understanding. When I first started with this, I anticipated that there would be one standardized market for carbon, Steve. is that even a possibility?
You know, that's a question. I think, you know, there's a big question mark out there where there's someone like the USDA or the EPA or some government agencies or combination of government agencies are going to put some, some parameters around this. And there is a somewhat, but yeah. It is a little bit of the Wild West out there right now.
And it sure is.
It's a little concerning. I think it will sort itself out. But obviously, you know, day one of the Biden presidency, we're back in the Paris Climate Accord. This is not going to go away. And I do think that there's going to be an evolution, a very quick evolution of this here in the next 6 to 18 months.
Right. Right. I agree. And your Wild West analogy, I think, is accurate. And it can be concerning, but the opportunities that come in an environment like we're in right now, Steve, they're numerous, unbelievable opportunities here. So let's go to the first item in your list, promises, pitfalls, and preparation. Working backwards, promises. What are the realistic promises of a carbon market? What can or what should an average farmer in the middle of Iowa expect from the development of the carbon markets?
Well, I think obviously there's going to be many players that are going to be either knocking at the door or already there. You know, the bottom line is that they're going to pay you to put carbon from the atmosphere back into your ground. I mean, that's the goal here. And the question is, you know, how much can that ground store and what are you going to be paid for it? There's ranges anywhere from $5 a ton to $40 a ton for that carbon. On average, you can probably store about a ton of carbon per year, per acre. And so that's pretty much almost a one-to-one. I mean, it can vary on either side of that. But I mean, if you can get another $5 to $40 an acre out of your ground, obviously that's promising. But it's not all free money. You're going to have to make changes to be able to capture that and understand those costs. But there is that promise out there of being paid for, you know, carbon is the new crop of the year for this year. So, being able to capture something in addition to growing an annual crop like corn or soybeans is, you know, I'll take it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's where those that have gone through the preparation to get to this point, that understand the minimum or no-till, that understand the benefits of the cover crops, that and I shouldn't say understand, I'm not, that have realized some of the potential. They've already implemented some of these practices.
Right.
Now they've worked through the yield, you know, any potential yield loss. They've worked through that. They've got an understanding of what's really possible out there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and the other thing is that there's some, obviously, you know, you mentioned it, side benefits as far as, you know, long term from a sustainability standpoint. This works very much in parallel with that. I think there's going to be some other markets that emerge. So, you know, when you're signing up for these carbon markets, be aware there's some water quality markets that are going to be coming along probably with that, and be flexible enough. And part of the preparation is just having your ducks in a row, having the data. The more data and more documentation of some of these practices that you do have on each individual field, probably the higher dollar amount that you're going to get for these credits.
Yeah, interesting. And when you're talking about documentation, you are seriously talking about documenting the practices that were put to use in those fields. You're not asking anybody to document how much carbon was stored per acre, just the practices that were put in place that on that field, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Gotcha.
I mean, and there, we'll figure out how much carbon was stored because we can test for that, but they want to know how you got there. And I think that's the important thing.
Excellent. Excellent, Steve. Man, I'm looking forward to this and watching it develop. We'll stay in touch on it, all right?
Awesome. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
You bet. That's Steve Cubbage. He's with Record Harvest. Check it out. Check it out. It is worth looking at. We've got Sarah Schaefer next.
Then put your little hand in mine. There ain't no hill or mountain we can't climb.
It starts with a plan. That's why America's Conservation Ag Movement is inviting you to get your farm business ready for 2021 with a free Resource Stewardship Planning Guide. Get your free guide today at agweb.com/ACAM.
Rise and shine, woodchuck chuckers. It's Groundhog Day!
Don't forget your booties because it's cold outside.
It's cold out there every day. What is this, Miami Beach? Not hardly.
I heard there's a storm coming, Davis.
We better get going if we're going to stay ahead of the weather.
If we're going to stay ahead of the weather.
That's pal, right. You got that moisture on your head.
Oh, goodness. That's so much fun.
Is it snowing in space?
It might be. It might
Good work, Joe. Good work,
Welcome
Joe.
Back. Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. That's Davis. Let's bring in Sarah Schaefer. She is the editor of Top Producer and the architect of TP Summit. How are you, Sarah? It's good to talk with you.
Good to talk to you, Chip. I think architect is really a good description for putting the summit off in 2021.
Yeah, no doubt. It's a hybrid event. I mean, I wish we could get all 900 people back together in Chicago again, but not going to happen. Not this year.
Not this year. In the future, not this year.
That's right. So tell us about this hybrid that you're doing.
Yes. So we are spreading out the fun across 2 weeks this month. So the 15th through the 17th, we will have a small group in Nashville. And so we are sold out for that portion, but it will be very COVID safe, traditional like our previous events, speakers, networking. We will also honor our 2021 Top Producer Awards. So even if you can't be in Nashville with us, you can join us to celebrate these five amazing operations on February 15th at 7 p.m. We will be live broadcasting that on agweb.com.
Cool. Outstanding. And did you say five? There's five finalists this year?
So during this awards banquet, we will do our three Top Producer of the Year finalists. And then we also have our Young Farmer Award and our Female Farmer Award. So it's just going to be a fun celebration of all that's good and great in the business of farming.
Right, right. Okay, so you're taking a lot of different pieces and plugging them together. It's not just the Top Producer seminar that we've all grown to love over the years, but you've got there are other conferences that are part of the summit. Tell us about that.
Exactly. So we have our traditional seminar summit programming. Then we also have programming specific for female farmers and young farmers, kind of that under 40 crowd. And so both some of the sessions in Nashville, but then also the following week online from the 23rd through the 25th, we'll have content that really does appeal. There's some specifically for some of those groups and then some with broad mass appeal.
Right. So the broad mass appeal, those kinds of conversations at TPS are driven by kind of a theme, the trends that you are really trying to highlight. And you've got the theme or the title on the summit this year is Breaking New Ground. How did you come up with that?
So it's kind of funny that when we first started thinking about this, actually pre-COVID, that was the topic we came up with. And it just keeps getting better and better with everything that we've been facing in the last few months. So it's really to think about, how can I make my operation better? What can I do? You know, we'll be doing some forward looking, but it's really more inward. We're thinking like, this is something I can go home and improve in my operation today, whether that's through my leadership, through my HR plan, through my financial management, through my succession plan, but just really proactive and tactical, which is, I really think, you know, that's how you move the needle.
Yeah. Yeah, we featured a couple of the speakers that are going to be a part of TPS this year. Steve Cubbage and Frank Mittlern are here. But, boy, you've got an impressive list again, Sarah.
Oh, let me tell you some of my favorites, Chip. So those two are fantastic. We also have Eric Snodgrass, the meteorologist with Nutrien. I learn something every time I talk to him. We have a great inspirational piece with John Phipps about how to make 2021 a leap year. So you don't want to miss John Phipps. One thing I'm super excited about is I will be moderating a panel with five farmers from five different countries. We're talking Australia, Zimbabwe, Brazil, Netherlands, and Ireland, hearing about the challenges they're facing. So, you know, we all haven't got to travel much this year. So let's take a trip around the world and meet these impressive farmers. We're talking carbon. Also, we have Esther George, the president of the Kansas City Federal Reserve Bank, is going to be doing an economic outlook. So if you've not heard Esther, she is fantastic. And I am so excited that she's going to be joining us for a live session. We also have time. We'll be visiting with Seth Meyer, the new USDA chief economist. This will be the week right after the Ag Outlook Forum. So I am certain that will be a lively conversation as well.
Right. Absolutely. And some real superstars. You've got Temple Grandin. Is presenting in the virtual.
Oh my gosh. Yes. For all the challenges COVID has brought us, it has brought us some opportunities to hear some of these speakers that you would just not get to hear otherwise. Right. And so we've been able to get them on the docket and they've all got great messages to share this year.
Yeah. Yeah. No question about it. All right, Sarah. Hey, I'll see you down in Nashville. I'm looking forward to that. We're going to be broadcasting live. Thanks to Clifton Larson Allen. We'll be broadcasting live from Nashville. That is on the 16th of February. So, and then I'm going to share a little bit of time on stage with Varsity Joe Vaklevic. So I'm looking forward to that.
It's going to be a fun conversation.
You bet. You bet. Sarah, good luck, and we'll keep pushing it. This is so worthwhile. You can't forget, go to tpsummit.com, get registered there. When you register, use the code AgriTalk, and we're going to cut your cost in half. That's a pretty cool offer right there, Sarah. Thanks for doing that.
Hey, we want to get this good information out to people, and it'll be fun. It'll be interactive. Some will be on demand. It'll be a lot of fun.
Excellent. Good stuff, Sarah. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks, Chip.
You bet. All that's right, Sarah Schaefer. She's the editor of Top Producer. Thanks for listening this morning. Come back this afternoon. Brian Grady, Jeff Wilson from Pro Farmer. Tomorrow morning, Jim Mintert and the Farmer Forum.